like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Kathy Unruh, co-founder of Meow Now. Meow is an acronym that stands for Managing and Ending Overpopulation Wisely. And the St. Petersburg-based organization aims to reduce the free-roaming cat population in Pinellas County, chiefly by employing TNVR, Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, Return, and other measures as well. In other words, Meow Now addresses community cats, what used to be and sometimes still is called feral cats. Meow Now was launched about 5 years ago, and like many young, ambitious organizations, it has faced a number of challenges and changes, and we'll discuss Meow's history, evolution, mission, reinvention, and future when I speak with Kathy Unruh in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later on in the program, I'll play back a brief interview I recorded with Michael Lorette, wildlife biologist and crocodile specialist, who's at the center of an ongoing effort to study and nurture a significant number of crocodile hatchlings born in the area of Turkey Point Nuclear Generating Station. That's right, a nuclear power plant near Homestead, Florida. Meanwhile, since a significant part of today's show will be devoted to cats, it's essential, I think, to mention that it's now official. New York is the first state to outlaw the declaw procedure, declawing cats, in other words. We spoke about this a few weeks ago with Dr. Jennifer Conrad, a pivotal player behind the scenes in getting this legislation passed, but it was still awaiting Governor Cuomo's signature, which it now has. So congrats to all concerned, including all the cats that will be protected from that procedure. Also, a quick programming note, I'll be away next Wednesday, so I'm pleased to say that Bev Capshaw will be hosting Talking Animals in my absence. Right now, let's get to Kathy with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is Kathy Unruh on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Duncan. Nice to be with you.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. And gosh, I feel like there's a lot to cover about Meow Now, and I certainly hope to get to most of it this morning. But let's start with a question that may be going through the minds of some folks listening who maybe don't have direct experience with community cats, again, previously known as feral cats. Why would smart, accomplished people create an organization whose focus is helping those community cats? What was the collective impetus amongst the founders?
Well, we all care about animals, some companion animals and all animals, and all of us were aware of the issue of community cats. They are everywhere. They're at restaurants and industrial parks in your backyard. There's a lot of them in Pinellas County, and we just wanted to help. And also, each of us had experience with TNVR prior.
I see. So what did the earliest days of the organization look like? For starters, who were or are the co-founders of Meow Now?
First is Marilyn Weaver, your friend and mine, one of the most ardent and successful animal advocates in Pinellas County and the Tampa Bay area. She met Dan Hester, a companion animal advocate, and they came up with the idea, and they called me in, and so we are the three co-founders. We started actually working in 2012 because at that time TNVR was illegal in Pinellas County. So it took us close to 2 years to advocate, lobby, negotiate, to get a 3-year trial run granted by the county in which to prove that TNVR does work. Prove that well before the 3-year deadline. And so now TNVR is fully legal in Pinellas County, and we're still at it.
So just to back up for a sec, why, until you got that three-year trial pushed through, why was TNVR illegal there?
To sum it up most succinctly, probably, the cats were looked at as nuisance animals in the same way as if you feed raccoons outdoors or so on. And they were looked at in that way.
I see. And, you know, I think before we get any further, just I think a lot of people listening probably are familiar with this, but there's probably certainly some at least who are not. So let's talk a little bit, since we've already kind of used the acronym TNVR, let's talk a little bit about that. So first of all, it stands for Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return. Just so we have a little bit of context before we move into other aspects of Meow Now, talk a little bit about what TNVR does and what it involves, just so everybody's kind of up to speed on that before we proceed.
We go to what are called colonies, which is where the community cats live together, and they have caregivers. The caregiver is just a nice, friendly neighbor who provides food and water and oversees the cats for their health and so on. So we get calls from caregivers and we go to their colonies where we bait and trap the cats. The cats are not hurt. And then the cats are taken and they're fed and watered until the time of their surgeries. That's the neuter part. They're spayed or neutered. They're vaccinated against rabies, and then they stay with us until they're fully revived, well-fed, and ready to go home, and that's when they are returned, trapped, neutered, vaccinated, returned.
When you say return, so they're returned back to the colony from whence they were plucked before the TNVR process began.
Absolutely. They go home to their caregiver, and that's just one of the best things. When you take a cat back, open that trap, and see that cat run and so happy to be home, that makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
Trapping is hard work.
Right. Well, we'll maybe talk a little bit more about that at some point as well. But when you say caregiver, I mean, I guess what people probably should really be picturing is that there are people, who, of course, who do feed and otherwise look after the cats. And in some cases, they're the ones that help trap the ones that we just described for the TNVR process. But you also mentioned colonies. So we should be clear that in most cases, at least, these cats do live, you know, outside, like you say, in all kinds of locations, outside a restaurant, outside of people's homes, any number of other places, but they're typically living outside.
Yes, they are. And there are several colonies that are lucky enough to have a caregiver that does provide them some sort of shelter. But cats are really astute and accomplished at being able to find shelter. They do a great job of it. They can, you know, get in pipes under the street when it's raining and things like that.
So yeah.
They're very good at finding shelter, but most of ours are fortunate enough to have somebody who provides something for them.
And I guess, too, that part of what goes with that is unless cats, by a certain age, are socialized or have some ongoing contact with humans, most of the kind of cats we're talking about don't have that, and therefore they're super skittish. Some are warm up to their caregiver over time, but if another human that didn't know them came along, they probably would take off like a shot.
That's correct. That's the feral, but we've changed that terminology, as you've mentioned, to community because they belong to all of us in the community. And let me just say quickly that when we get kittens who are young enough to be tamed, we put them in foster homes and then they get adopted out. So we do that as well.
Yeah, so you can intervene early enough for those cats that come from that background so they can, A, be socialized, and B, go live in a home as opposed to continuing kind of as their other fellow cats in that colony would have lived.
Correct.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me about the Meow Now focus on Pinellas County. What sort of discussions were there amongst you and your co-founders about either a tighter focus or conversely, maybe at some point there was even thought or discussion of serving a broader area than Pinellas County? How did that all kind of get sorted out in the early days?
It was pretty clear geographically because Pinellas County was quite behind the times. Hillsborough County has long had a very successful TNVR operation and Manatee County the same. So we were sitting here in between these counties and saying, hey, what's up with this? We need to change this and make this happen in Pinellas. So that was very clear.
And was there, as much as that was clear, was there ever a consideration at one point or another that once it was established that perhaps it could, that it maybe could widen out, like maybe serve even as a, like a pilot program of sorts?
Well, there are successful TNVR organizations all across the country, and we have many big dreams. To widen out would be great, but let me just throw a couple of pretty astounding numbers at you.
Sure.
No one can be completely sure how many community cats there are in this county of Pinellas. But if you use, there's a well-regarded formula in the animal welfare world that if you divide the human population by six. That's pretty close to the number of cats that you're going to have in the community. So in Pinellas County, then, we would have 161,772 cats living outdoors as community cats. So we have our work cut out for us right here at home.
No kidding. What an interesting calculus, though. For some other time, or maybe we'll come back if you know, we have so much to cover now, I don't that we can get into this, but I'm certainly interested to know how that formula was arrived at, just because that seems super intriguing. But anyway,
let's tell you that really quickly. Let me tell you really quickly.
Sure, of course. I think it's, yeah.
Best Friends Animal Society, mm-hmm. which is the mother of all animal welfare, just a great organization. Many years of experience in PNVR, and they base that on the field.
Wow. Okay. Cool. Well, see, we've already learned all kinds of things here, and we're only a few minutes in. Speaking of which, in case people just tune in, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Kathy Unruh, a co-founder of Meow Now. The Meow acronym stands for Managing and Ending Overpopulation Wisely, and the organization aims to reduce the free-roaming cat population in Pinellas County, chiefly by employing TNVR, which we just discussed, stands for Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return. If you'd like to ask Kathy a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So let's talk about how Meow Now operates, by which I mean, to what extent is it affiliated with other organizations versus functioning independently, and how might that have changed over the 5 years or so that it's existed?
Well, we just went through a humongous change just last month, when the original founders retook control of the organization. And so now the three founders are the board members, and we're working very hard. And we are supported by many wonderful partners, Friends of Strays, the Humane Society of Pinellas, Humane Society of Tampa Bay. We have lots of organizations that support us, primarily by providing the low-cost, high-volume surgeries that we need for our cats.
So what's driven those decisions in terms of partnering? I mean, how did they either come to you, or how did you go to them, or how did that begin?
When we started out, we knew that we wanted the chief executives of the Biggies on our board. And so the original board was composed of founders, other people, and CEOs of the other organizations. And then the way we began working with everybody is simply, hey, we have cats that need surgeries. Who can provide them? At what cost can you provide them? And that's how we developed those partnerships over the years.
And so I guess it's not, although I guess the core of it is sort of geography-based. You mean the Society of Tampa Bay, for example, would be probably slightly outside of the core area that Meow Now kind of intends to serve.
Right. While we do not trap in Hillsborough County, they have the best surgery centers. They can do the most cats at the best price.
Okay.
And so we take our cats over to Hillsborough for surgeries quite often.
Yeah. How does the organization now, especially in light of this kind of humongous change as you described it, how does it work? Who directs what happens, and like what cats are, let's say, going to Humane Society of Tampa Bay versus Humane Society of Pinellas or Friend of Strays or the other organizations you mentioned that you guys have some affiliation with? I mean, how are those decisions made?
We are an all-volunteer organization except for one person, our executive director, Chad Thompson, and he makes those decisions. He knows which day, which organization is doing community cat surgery, and he figures out how many surgery spaces are going to be available, then where can I go and trap. What we are trying to do now, let me throw a couple really astounding numbers at you. We have a program called Cat Stats, where people can go on our website and register their cat. Right now, we have 4,356 cats registered. We have 468 active requests right now for us to come TNVR their cat. That is just an overwhelming amount of work. So he sorts through and tries to prioritize. And the thing that we try to do is get to the caregivers who absolutely positively cannot afford on their own to pay to have these cats spayed or neutered, which is why we rely so heavily on donations, because we have to cover those costs. So we try to target low-income areas or areas where the colonies are huge and the people just really need the most help. It's a tough thing to sort out how to prioritize.
Right. So I get that a key element is if caregivers simply just can't afford it, and yet those cats in that particular colony really need to be spayed or neutered. But yeah, so is there some other sort of criteria that Chad is using? Because it just seems like just the sheer numbers are so daunting, and then to make those decisions and know that, okay, if I choose these ones over here, at least for now, these ones over there are not going to be attended to just because we can't hit everybody that we'd like to.
Right. And the most effective TNVR is called targeted TNVR, where you work in one neighborhood and you try to get 100% or at least above 80 into 90% of all of those cats spayed or neutered in that area. That's going to very much effectively reduce the population, which is the ultimate goal of TNVR, is to spay and neuter everyone so that the population is reduced and due to natural attrition over time actually goes away. Now, the reason why we prioritize the low-income caregivers is because they are already spending a lot just to feed and care for these cats. We need to reduce their population so that their costs don't go up because they keep getting more cats.
Are the caregivers that you're referring to the same as or overlapping the Meow Now volunteers?
No.
No, okay.
Although we have had some caregivers become volunteers, but no, the caregiver ranges everything from the guy who owns the auto shop where the cats are living at to the postal service worker who on her rounds has noticed cats and she's made it part of her extracurricular duty to feed the cats that she sees while she's driving. It's all over the board, these caregivers, all kinds of wonderful hearted people.
Right. They have all kinds of stories, all kinds of backgrounds, and all kinds of connections, I guess, to that given colony. But at some point, they know or learn to contact Meow Now and say, hey, I need help, and I hope you guys are the ones that can provide it.
Correct.
Yeah.
And at some point, we have a future goal that we'd like to work on that I'd love to discuss with you.
Yeah. Well, sure, we can do that now. I mean, I have plenty of questions. I mean, one thing, maybe we'll come back to that in just one sec, Kathy, and remind me, because I'm juggling a bunch of stuff, including emails that are now coming in and stuff I want to get to, plus my own questions. But since you touched on it in passing, maybe I should just follow up a little bit now. The reliance that you mentioned on donations, I was going to ask how Meow Now is funded. I mean, helping free-roaming cats doesn't exactly look like a get-rich scheme. So I'm just wondering, is the organization sustained strictly by donations? Are there other sources of revenue? Is that something that's being altered in the wake of kind of reinventing the organization recently? Maybe talk a little bit about that.
We are very much donation dependent, and the board members have invested quite a lot of their own resources, treasure as well as time. And we, in the early years, were successful in getting some grants. So we will continue to apply for grants. But what we are beginning to advocate for and will definitely be asking for in the coming fiscal year is financial assistance from the county. This is a county issue. It's countywide. It affects numerous citizens across the county. And we would love to have county funding and think it's entirely justified. Because if we can reduce the number of cats, that reduces the number of cats who go into Pinellas County Animal Services. It reduces the number of calls they get. It reduces euthanasia, which so-called euthanasia. I'm just going to talk straight with you because we're talking animals. It reduces just killing cats because they're not wanted in the neighborhood and they're not being taken care of and because they're not paying. So we think that's a well-justified request because it will ultimately save taxpayers money. They won't have to pay for all that. And also we do protect human health by vaccinating against rabies and just make life nicer for everyone. When you TNVR, cats don't hunt as much, they don't roam as much, they don't go looking for food, they're not fighting for mates, they're not fighting over territory. It makes life happier for humans and felines.
So with all those magnificent selling points, I would think that there would be a fairly reasonable thing to get county or other funding beyond the donations.
I love that you think that, Duncan, and I hope that you were 200% correct.
Okay. Okay. Sounds like it's a little bit wide-eyed at this point to think that's going to happen. But I guess would part of that, how that maybe could shift and not be as innocent a hope, be as you guys have a more documented track record I mean, in other words, is there something that you could see happening after Meow Now has been around longer, and especially kind of it's in this reinvented state? So in a sense, if I understand things, it's kind of starting over, or has been recently. So would there be something you could point to over some period of time where you could go back to the county and say, look, here's what we've done, here's our numbers, here's what it means. Do you think you could kick in a few bucks?
Yeah, we have the numbers. We've done over 5,000 cats, and we've fostered over 400. And what you really look at, the significant number, is in your animal shelter of your county. So in this case, Pinellas County Animal Services. The bottom line number you look at is, are the numbers of cats coming through the door going down? And the answer to that has been yes. And there's also something very hopeful, starting with the county currently, which is that they are engaging in return to field, which I imagine you're familiar with, but not all listeners will be. It's when someone does bring in an ear-tipped cat or a cat that is a community cat, then Pinellas County Animal Services is also going to begin having them spayed and neutered and return to field. So that's very hopeful. That's a partnership that we have with Animal Services right now. So we're optimistic about getting some financial support, which would be via the commissioners.
Yeah.
And we plan to start meeting with commissioners on an individual basis and speaking with them. So we are hopeful.
Sure. Okay. So it sounds like it's reasonable to think you'll get there, but that's kind of a little bit more in the distance at the moment.
Well, no, we'd really like it to happen next fiscal year, and we would encourage all of your listeners to let their Pinellas County commissioners know that they think this is a great idea.
And another thing, I guess, along those lines that we could suggest people might want to do is check out the Meow Now website, which is meownowfl.org. So you can find out more about what we're talking about. And if at some point you feel inclined to support the organization, there's a donate tab, as I recall. So really, just to back to my original question, just to clarify. So at the moment, the only funding that Meow Now is getting is by way of donations, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay, so let's go back to what you said we should, you'd like to talk a little bit more about, and then I'm going to get into a few more of my questions and some of the emails that have come in.
What I wanted to talk about was the county. So we hit that just now.
Okay, I thought there was some other element of that. Sorry.
I said I want to talk about something, and that was included in your very next question. So that's
okay.
Great. Thanks.
Wow. All right. I was more on top of things than I realized. That's great.
But,
right. Yeah. So part of the reason we're doing this conversation now is that Meow Now has, as you kind of noted, at least peripherally, hit some rough patches, which raised some serious questions, I think, about its ongoing survival. And by saying this, I don't think kicking the organization while it's down or telling tales out of school. In fact, on the contrary, one of the reasons I really wanted to spotlight Meow Now at the moment is because the organization has been, I think, enormously transparent about its struggles, notably including two unvarnished, detailed posts on its website that sort of really chronicled the struggles and what you plan to do about it. So just because I think there's a lot of stuff that's really illuminating and some cautionary tales and other things kind of all mixed in there, what would you like to say about the challenges that Meow Now has faced from when it was founded to where we are now, and what steps it's taken to overcome those challenges?
Well, the biggest thing is volunteers, and we have been very fortunate with volunteers, but we always need more to make it work. And it is a tremendous amount of work. It's essentially building a small business from the ground up and doing it with very limited funds and one staff person. Therefore, everyone who's on the board is a working board member. After we had completed our first 3 years successfully and knew that TNDR was safe, I retired from the board, and then a while later, Dan Hester, another co-founder, retired. Over the ensuing months after that, some of the board members began to just feel the burden of the workload. They believed that another animal welfare agency would take Meow Now under its wing. And so they waited for a few months for this other agency to come up with a plan to take over Meow Now. That did not happen. And by the time it was clear that that was not going to happen, the budget had not been written, the bank account had gone down dramatically, and Meow Now was about to go out of business. business. That's when Dan and I became aware of this via Marilyn. And that's when the three of us just said, we cannot let that happen. So we took the organization back. And we're back in business. But yeah, it is a lot of work.
Yeah. So, Kath, apart from the places, the organizations that you mentioned that do take care of the surgeries once these animals we're talking about are trapped and brought in to either be spayed or neutered, is there a direct relationship with an organization apart from those that are helping out with those surgeries?
Direct relationship, I'm not sure what kind you mean, but we get medical care for our kittens, for example.
Okay.
We have vets who contribute to that and will give us reduced costs and so forth. But essentially, the only agency partnerships that we have are about the medical care and the surgical costs. That's with the exception of Pinellas County Animal Services, which we work with on the return to field and getting the cats back to their caregivers and that sort of thing.
Okay, so that, I guess that is the one I guess would fit the bill of what I was talking about, that's outside just the medical and the surgeries and stuff. It is
Pinellas. And you know what? There's also sometimes we get foster parents. When we don't have enough foster parents, there are agencies who will foster for us as well. I don't want to omit them. I'm sorry. So
sure.
Foster is very important.
Gotcha. So how many volunteers would you say are part of the Meow Now organization?
We have a database of, I think, about 100 or more. I should have asked Chad that. He has the database, and he works with them. But as with any organization, you have a core group of volunteers, which is a couple, three dozen, mm-hmm. who are very key and very important to us and do a lot of the heavy lifting.
So do a lot of those, or at least the core group, help out the caretakers that you've already referred to that probably have a specific colony or more than one maybe that they tend to? So the Meow Now volunteers, would they help with that, with the feeding, or is it mostly kind of the trapping part of the TNVR that the volunteers help with? Or what would some volunteer activities be under the Meow Now world?
Trapping is a big thing, but we need all kinds of departments, from administrative to social media, to website management, to fundraising, to events. So we have many departments. Again, it's a small business with various departments.
Okay. Here are some fairly pointed questions that came in on one of the emails. It says here, I don't mean to insinuate that Kathy is old, but why is it all caregivers are older, mostly women and a few men? Where are the young people? How do we get them to care and to help? Is Meow Now planning any fundraiser events?
We do have young caregivers, very much so. So they run across the spectrum. And certainly there are many who are older, but they are from all demographics. And yes, we have a newly formed fundraising committee, which has just held its first meeting. And they will be planning events. That's another thing that we need to get back up and running as we get back into business here. And I would welcome everyone to follow our Facebook page, which is simply Meow Now. And that's where we post all that sort of thing. Also, our website, which you had mentioned, it is up, but it is pretty barren because it was about ready to go out of business. But we have a beautiful new website being created by a volunteer organization company, and that should be up within the week. So keep checking the website and check the Facebook page to find out what's happening.
I'm just wondering, based on the kind of the general tone of that email, because of what happened, although, as you've explained, Meow Now has the original founders have come back and there's a sense of reinvention, a new website in the offing, all kinds of things. Still, was there some frustration, exasperation, something with what happened prior to this with Meow Now? Are there people that feel frustrated kind of with the organization or did?
The frustration, yes, because during this period of sort of being placed on hold, more than ever, caregivers were needing help and not getting responded to. And that is our number one biggest challenge on the operation side, is that so many people need help. And we are a small organization and we can't get to everyone right away. And sometimes it is quite a bit of a wait, which is another reason why we very much want the county to step up, because if they do, then we can expand our staff and we can expand our area of working, and we can be much more effective.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's more than a few things that are on the horizon, but things need to be done. So that further affiliation with the county, the fundraising events, which sounds like they're being discussed and planned, but might be still a bit longer before they're scheduled. But sounds like different ways to also raise awareness and hopefully raise some funds beyond just the donations that you so far seem to be forced to rely on for now to keep the operation afloat.
Yes, and it's really encouraging, though. We took it back over on June 13th, and today is July 24th, and what has been done in that time, it has us really pumped. People are very excited that we're getting back in business, so we're getting a lot of help. And so, once again, we are optimistic. I don't want to sound doomsday. We're just rebuilding it, rebuilding. But things are looking good, and we hope they continue to look better.
Right. And again, as I mentioned, one of the reasons I thought this would be a good time to do it, and also why I thought it seemed like, at least to me, and I'm certainly not steeped in all the nuances by a long shot, but I mean, just again, the posts on the website that really are addressing kind of the struggles and what they've meant, and then what the plan is to try to really do better in Meow Now 2.0, or the second version, or whatever the right term would be. So those are still, again, very much there and available for people to read. Again, the website is meownowfl.org. Yeah, so it sounds like what we're really doing is discussing an organization that's in transition or sort of into its second life.
Correct. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So we've done shows a number of times over the years that are TNVR related and community cats, and back in the day when none of those names existed and they were still called feral cats. So occasionally the trapping and what goes with that, and in those days sometimes even the V wasn't in there, it was just TNR. But anyways, it sometimes does elicit criticism of one kind or another of how those cats generally, or even after they're vaccinated and spayed or neutered and returned, can wreak havoc on some of the birds or who live nearby or other wildlife. In fact, I was going to ask you this question anyway, and then just a few minutes ago, this email came in. It says, great, all in uppercase letters, release feral cats back into nature, or what's left of it, so the cats can eat even more birds. In my homeowner's neighborhood, we get to clean up the bird remains. Cats don't love you. They adhere to whomever feeds them. Community cats, my butt. Your guests and her minions are susceptible to a romantic illusion that they're cute. In fact, you die alone, your cats will eat you. A pet dog would never. So some fairly provocative language there. But what it does do, I guess, is sort of capture this attitude I was starting to describe that I hear about over the years, and especially when I do shows like this, but just generally sometimes about community cats and free-roaming cats. So any comments? First of all, with all the other kinds of challenges you guys have had, have you met with any of that kind of resistance or negative response over the 5 years or so that you guys have existed?
We will get the occasional comments, such as the email that you just read.
Yeah.
But fortunately, very little, because over the many years that this argument has been made that the community cats are damaging to wildlife, study after study after study has refuted that argument. When cats have a consistent, steady food source, they go there. When they have been spayed or neutered, they lose their desire to roam and look for mates. The hunting goes way down. There's no need to hunt. And I can take you to colonies where what the cats do is eat and then sleep in the sun all day and wait for the next meal. So yeah. I understand the person's point of view. We've heard it. But again, it does not prove out. And if he is talking about the birds in his neighborhood, I wonder if those cats have been spayed or neutered, if they have a caregiver, which would probably change the situation tremendously.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, again, having done related shows over the years, and there are people like Best Friends and others who have a lot of history and a lot of data on this. And so that does seem to be the case, is that when TNVR happens for those colonies, then, as you've noted, really a lot of the reasons that cats would maybe be more aggressively on the hunt of one kind or another, or just doing more prowling of one kind or another, those reasons are diminished or removed even. And so those cats in those colonies pose little or no threat to the birds or other wildlife that that generally is part of that concern and certainly part of this emailer's concerns.
That's correct. And also the people who make that sort of argument, they tend to also argue for trap and kill rather than DNVR, rather than return. Trap and kill does not work because you do not affect mating. And cats are, they're so capable of reproduction. They can have lots of kittens per year, and so they just keep on reproducing. And when you take some cats out and kill them, other cats are going to appear. So it never, never solves the problem. The thing that is going to solve the issue is when every community in the United States does TNVR and does it effectively. That's when the issue will be resolved or under control.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, one of the things that was interesting that came up when I first started doing these shows, and I know it's a dynamic that certainly exists to this day, is that, as you noted, if something happens nefarious or whatever to one of the cats in a colony, that cat A isn't gone. I mean, cat A technically, yes, is gone, but somehow, one way or another, a cat will come right in to take the place that cat A had occupied. So you're not, generally at least, you're not diminishing that population because there will be another cat or two cats or whatever come in to replace the cat that's gone or the cat that something bad did happen to. So again, you're not diminishing the population that way, and you're certainly not controlling the population that way.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. So, Kathy, we've sort of just about reached the end of our time. Anything else we should know about Meow Now, where it's headed, anything else just that people that do care about cats generally and community cats in particular should think about or do?
I would ask everyone who is not educated on the subject to simply Google community cats. And you mentioned Best Friends. Best Friends is a great place to go to learn a lot about it. You can just Google it and educate yourself and look at the studies, and you'll get a better sense of how prevalent community cats are, but how effective we can be at managing them if we all work together. And that's what we are doing. We are working together. We're asking for everyone who can partner with us to please do so. And we are determined, and we're going to just keep doing our best and hopefully growing and getting more and more support.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for joining us. This has been Kathy Unruh. The organization, again, is Meow Now. Meow is an acronym. And the website, one more time, is meownowfl.org. Kathy, thank you so much for joining us and filling us in on Meow Now. And maybe we'll get a little progress report a little bit down the road and see how everything's been going.
Thank you, Duncan. I so much appreciate your work, as you know.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In a few moments, I'll talk with Michael Lorette, who's part of a team that looks after crocodiles, and this time of year, crocodile hatchlings, at a nuclear power plant near Homestead, Florida, called Turkey Point. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Comedy Corner. After a discussion largely devoted to cats, it seems only fitting to hear a piece from Paula Poundstone, who does a fair amount of material about cats, though hers are clearly indoor cats. This is Paula Poundstone with a piece called Cats Puff Up in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
You know what I can't figure out? All my cats are indoor cats, and some of them are out-and-out fat and lazy cats. And I don't know, why do they puff up when they fight with each other? You know, I know, you know, they say, oh, cats puff up so they look bigger to their adversaries. But first of all, my cats all know each other. You know what I mean? They don't really believe for a moment that one of them got really big. I mean, cats know about puffing up. That did they think it was a trick only they knew? And the other cat actually just got bigger in that moment? That doesn't make any sense. And it seems to me it must take a lot of energy to puff up. You know, I would think that they would just have a meeting, and one day my head fat lazy cat would just turn to the others and say, "Look, at from now on, let's nobody puff up. We already know about puffing up. We're not fooling anybody. If you puff up and I puff up, we're the same anyways. Tell you what, once a day, I'm gonna grab each of you with my front paws and kick at you with my back paws." And you just take it. I tell you what, cats are no help whatsoever in terms of security, you know. you know, cats get the exact same look on their face for a big giant moth as they do for an axe murderer. Great. I'm either going to get a hole in my head or my sweater.
That was Paula Poundstone with a piece called Cats Puff Up, taken from her album I Heart Jokes. Now let's hear my interview with Michael Lorette about these American crocodile hatching and flourishing at a nuclear power plant of all places in South Florida. This is Michael Lorette on Talking Animals on WMNF. So let's welcome to Talking Animals, Michael Lorette. Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
So some things about this might be counterintuitive. I mean, when most people think Florida, they think gators, obviously, not crocodiles. Why do these crocodiles live and hatch there in particular?
So when we talk about crocodiles, we're talking about a coastal species that has basically a geographical cap in regards to where they can live. They're very cold intolerant, so they can't live very far north. So that is very true. Florida has a reputation for gators, and that's because gators span all throughout the state, all the way up into the Carolinas, because they can't handle the cold. But when we're talking about crocodiles, they're all down south. And when we're talking about Turkey Point, we are on the southeast corner of the state, and it's perfect crocodile habitat.
So that's why they gather there. And then what role does being adjacent to a nuclear power plant have in the crocs hatching and apparently thriving in that area, or is that just largely coincidence?
It is a coincidence. So the canals were dug out. Obviously, they are cooling canals, so they serve as a secondary cooling source for the nuclear reactor. And in 77, they were doing some work, and they accidentally hit a crocodile nest. And in 78, the crocodile program was started. We've been monitoring crocodiles ever since.
I didn't realize it went that far back. That's remarkable. So to what extent do you and your colleagues, given how long especially that this program has been in place, how much do you guys do to kind of help shape the outcome of the hatchlings and how they're doing and where they're doing it?
So we, in regards to hatching season, which is where we're at right now, we monitor all the nests. We catch as many of the babies as we can. We record data with our five-step process, which includes measurement, weight. We install a microchip, just like what you would put in your dog or your cat. We cut unique scoot clip numbers. So, in other words, that croc will have scoot clips that no other crocodile has. And then number five, which is the best part, releasing them back into the wild.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part is when we release them back into the wild, FPNL has dug out several release ponds just for this purpose. So given what we know about crocodiles and how to give them a better start, better chance of survival, we release them in these release ponds.
So are those scattered throughout kind of South Florida, Mike? How did they determine where those would be? And I'm sure there were certain factors that went into deciding their location.
They're in our southern part of our protected area there on Turkey Point property. And we do have a couple other release points around the perimeter, but it is mainly our southern Everglades Mitigation Bank area.
And then, since they are chipped, once they're released, how far do they travel? I mean, what's the norm, and then what are some kind of unusual cases?
So, when they hatch, crocodiles will stay together. I mean, that's where they have strength in numbers. That's pretty much their only defense. As they get older, they'll start dispersing and looking for their own territories, their own food sources, you know, being a lot more independent, and that can take them anywhere. And to give you an example, there was a croc that was initially tagged all the way down south in Turkey Point, and it was caught all the way up in Tampa.
Wow.
So they can definitely move around, and Tampa is not really a place where they're known to be because of the cold factor. So that crocodile would probably either make its way down in the winter or be in a tough situation once the cold front comes through.
So in other words, that croc that you're talking about, something might have been amiss for him or her to travel that far.
Right. It's not typical, but as we can see, it does happen.
Right. But it sounds like, if I caught the last part of your explanation, is that at a certain point, that's going to prove problematic for that croc.
Right. Right. It could, assuming it gets, you know, as we know, it gets colder further north. for longer periods of time, and that's obviously not good for crocodiles.
Right. And so how does the crocodile season actually work? I know, or I take it at least, that been a number of hatchlings just recently. I think I saw 73 or something. But I guess there's more to be expected. And then how does the season divide up over the calendar year?
Well, typically our hatching starts in July. Ours started a little early this year in late June.
Okay.
And it'll go all the way up until, you know, safe area is probably mid-August. So the work that we do is very seasonal. Depending on what season you're in will determine what work you're doing.
Right.
So we have crocodile mating season. During the mating season, we clear areas, historical nesting areas, so these crocs are going back to the same nesting areas, which makes our job easier as well. Make the crocodile's job easier, it makes our job easier. And then we monitor all the nests. We try to find all the nests, monitor them during the incubation period. And then where we really see the fruits of our labor is when those babies hatch, pop out of the ground. We try to collect as many as we can so that we can tag, microchip, measure, and release them back into the wild.
And so just the last moment or so here, Mike, but once they're released and they're chipped, so you're tracking them and including kind of that wayward one that ended up in Tampa, et cetera, I mean, what do you do with that data? What happens then? I mean, collecting their tracking patterns and kind of what happens after they hatch and are released in the wild. What do you do with that information?
So they're just identification numbers that are put in them. We aren't actually tracking the crocodiles. The only tracking we have is if we catch one year and we catch it in a different place another year, we know how much it's moved within how much time.
I see.
But we're not tracking them per se, but all the data we do record goes into a database where basically we share information with other agencies that are studying crocodiles, and we're able to better monitor the American crocodile population.
I see. So you're kind of a source for others who are doing more specific kinds of research as well as the things that you're doing initially.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I got you.
Yes.
Cool.
All the crocodile agencies down here work fairly close together for the betterment of the species.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing this. I've been speaking with Michael Lorette, and he is deep into croc season. And so thanks so much for filling us in and taking a few moments out of watching a bunch of crocs and do what they do and explaining some of that. So thank you very much.
Definitely, Duncan. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well, my thanks again to Michael Lorette for filling us in on the crocs by the power plant. Coming up at 11 on WNF is Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending this three-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including the noon hour, Midpoint with Nola Lalay. Then at 1 p.m., the music kicks back in with a wonderful new show, Euro Radio, hosted by Paco Morales, flowing right into Scott Elliott and the All-Souls edition of It's the Music at 2 p.m., and continuing on with all kinds of great music after that. Meanwhile, on today's show, as the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt. So we are at the point of Name That Animal Tune, which is a giveaway. Please only participate if you haven't won something from WNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize indeed, a Talking Animals t-shirt, to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. A clue, this song is definitely tied to our conversation a moment ago with Michael Lorette. Let's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. We will take your guess if you have it off the air, probably because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. Next week again, I'll be gone, but Bev Capshaw will be here doing Talking Animals in my absence. So I invite you to visit talkinganimals.net for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts and other podcasts are available there too. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Instagram page, our Twitter, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally, and follow me on Twitter and Instagram. That's all at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Rob Blair is up next after NPR News on Talking Animals.